Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 13.
Tradin. Hey, we're back.
We're back from our Italian vacation.
And I'm having gelato withdrawal.
Yeah, the gelato in Italy is...
the best.
Really, really superb.
But the chocolate gelato is just so delicious.
Or the melon. I love melon gelato where they have like the actual pieces of melon in it.
Yeah, but the chocolate gelato tastes like brownie mix that's not been cooked yet. It's amazing. On the food, I saw this thing. I don't remember where it is. I think it's in New York. But basically, you know how there was like the cronut? It was like a croissant and a donut.
Yeah, the cronut.
So now there's a crone. And it's a croissant that's a cone, and they put ice cream in it.
And oh my God.
So it's a crone.
I really consider that at Circus Krona.
What's that?
There's a circus called Circus Krona, I think in Germany, K-R-O-N-E, and they could serve the crone at the Krona.
Oh, and more on the food train. I was looking up the Harry Potter and the cursed child.
The new play in England.
Yeah, it's a play that I forget who it's, you know, J.K. Rowling wrote it with maybe Jack Thorne is his name, but he's like an actual playwright.
Yeah. Christine Jones is doing the set. Stephen Hoggett's doing choreography. It's being directed by
John Tiffany, who is one of my favorite directors.
Yeah. And he did like one of my favorite shows I've seen in New York. Well, Glass Menagerie was great, but also the vampire one.
Oh, Let the Right One In
that we saw at.
So good. Oh, that's why that whole team is together again, because of Let the Right One In.
Yeah, it's the same Let the Right One
In. But anyway, I'm back on the food. So I was looking up the dates of when it's playing in London. And because of course I want to see it. And the concessions is like the concessions from the Hogwarts train.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that cool?
So what kind of stuff do they have?
They have like, you know, the jelly, every flavored jelly bean or whatever.
And the chocolate frogs.
The chocolate frogs. And I was like, man, that's so fun. So fun. But the play takes place like when Harry, Hermione, and Ron are like in their 40s or 50s and they have their kids in school. And I just want to see it so badly.
So how long until you think it's on Broadway? It's opening in England in about a month in London.
No, the end of this month.
End of this month. So then how long until it hits Broadway?
Spring.
Spring. It'll make it for this year's Tonys.
Yes.
Speaking of things that are coming to Times Square, two of my favorite passions, circus, Cirque du Soleil, and the NFL, are teaming up to build a 40,000...
Your newly found passion of NFL.
I've loved it for like 3 years now.
To go, your parents.
Go Pats.
Go Patriots.
But they're building a 40,000 square foot attraction.
Permanent
attraction in the heart of Times Square that basically has, it's sort of like a museum with movies and interactive components. Tickets are going to be $30. And the idea is you go in and I guess you do different NFL related, Cirque du Soleil inspired, immersive tasks and games and things.
I bet you it won't be Cirque du Soleil inspired. I bet you it's going to be like NFL stuff with Cirque's ideas of how to make you do that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's interesting. A lot of the coverage has been talking about this is the first example of Cirque du Soleil really branching into a totally new direction, partnering with a sports franchise to do something that's not even really a live circus show. And that this could be the new model for Cirque du Soleil to do these kinds of partnerships and big unusual kinds of hybrid event crossover.
The creating new things and like the spectacles, they're good at that.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say anybody's better at spectacle than Cirque du Soleil.
Me.
you Yeah, you're pretty spectacular.
Yeah, but like that, I mean, that was what I always didn't understand was why when Julie Taymor did Spider-Man, why she didn't use Cirque's kind of...
I'm like 90% sure they reached out to Cirque du Soleil in the early days. And Cirque I think they said no, and I think it was because like they were concerned about the lyric, theater? Which is ironic because now that's where the Paramore is their Broadway show.
But they're not trying to fly over the Atherton twins. They do fly out over the islands, but they're on straps, right?
They are on straps. Not nearly as complicated as the Spider-Man rigging was. But they do have live drones, which is pretty crazy to have in an indoor theater. Like the flying drones, quadcopters. But enough about quadcopters. On today's episode, we called up Catherine Cavanaugh. We recorded this episode about 3 weeks ago when we weren't sure if we would have enough time this week to record an episode, which is why we don't address Brexit.
Yeah, we didn't address Brexit because it hadn't happened yet.
But so Catherine is a British circus critic and journalist. She runs a website called The Circus Diaries. And we'll have to ask her how she thinks Brexit's going to affect the circus industry and getting international circus performers in and out of the UK.
Yeah.
Because with the EU, it's pretty easy to get all these European circus performers in and out of the country. But in any case, the interview is really interesting. It's sort of a discussion of what it takes to be a circus critic. How do you write about circus? What are some of the challenges in identifying what's going on in the show and describing it to sort of a wide variety of audiences?
If you're a fan of the show, which I really, really hope you are, please share us on Facebook, Instagram us, tweet us, and rate us on iTunes. We have gotten some ratings.
Yeah, I think we have like 7 5 stars.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so far we've got a perfect score, but please.
So don't mess it up. Please. But yeah, so here's Catherine.
Tell me about the grant you got to come over to the States and see all the circus.
Yeah, so the Arts Council in England, they have an open pot of money, which is grants for the arts, but they have a specific pot within that, which is called Artists International Development Fund, which is in it's the Arts Council England and the British Council put money into that, and it is for people working in whatever art form to develop their own personal networks and personal knowledge and experience within their remit. And I was at a outdoor arts showcase event last October, and somebody from the Arts Council got up and said, we need more people from the performing arts, particularly circus and outdoor arts, because people aren't applying. So I thought, I'll lock that away in my brain. And and then earlier this year, I was in conversation with marketing manager from No Fit State Circus, because they just moved into a new training space in Cardiff, which is where I now live. And they said, we're going off to New York. And I went, that could tie in with this idea that was ticking around in my brain. So I went and had a look at the at the funding details on the website. And there's the deadline for that round of applications was 5 p.m. the next day. So I did my application in less than 23 hours, and somehow it came through. Good news.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it means I'm not going to spend weeks and weeks panicking about applications in the future again, I think.
For people who are in the States and maybe haven't come across your online magazine blog, which I've now been following for about a year and a half to get all my news about circus in the UK, could you tell everybody what the Circus Diaries is and sort of how you began writing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's thecircusdiaries.com, that's the plug. And it started off as an experiment, really, because I was frustrated that I wanted to find out more about circus shows and work that was happening and couldn't find the information anywhere. And after being frustrated for a while, there was a light bulb moment where I thought, well, I could start putting that information out and maybe other people will be interested in it. So that's what I started doing. Around the time that I started writing the blog, there was also an EU-funded festival residency called Unpack the Arts, which was set up to encourage cultural journalists to explore contemporary circus and find out how to write in a more informed way about the sort of work that's happening. So I took part in one of those in Belgium, and that gave me the confidence to continue, because there aren't really, or very few and far between, experts in writing on circus performance these days. So it's okay to start as a beginner, because we need beginners before we can have experts. So yeah, that was 3 years ago I started the blog, and it's had a couple of makeovers since then, sort of as I'm getting more more feedback from people who, I mean, I've come over to the States this month, and I'm meeting people in Chicago or New York, like yourselves, going, oh yeah, I read your blog and it's really useful. And that's a bit of a confidence boost as well. And so that inspires me to keep trying to up the game.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about sort of what the challenge of reviewing circus shows are and some of the challenges in using language to describe what you're seeing.
The challenges of reviewing the shows, for me now, I think are more about the finding the information that I want to communicate, because most of the time circus shows don't give out like programs which have performers' names or directors' names or anything like that. So each time I write a review, I'm spending hours trawling the internet and Facebook, trying to work out who these people are to give credit to where credit is due. Because I do think that is important. Like Cirque du Soleil shows, they have this brilliant press site where you can get all the information about their creative teams, who normally rack up like 12, 15 people from across the costumes and the music and the direction. But the actual performers in their shows don't get any mention at all. They just talk about the character names. And I think if we're going to develop a culture where high quality performance is recognized, it's not just about the overall show, it's about the individuals involved and the skills that people can have. So I think crediting performers is a real challenge.
And it's so funny, because it's something you wouldn't think about as being difficult to find, but I mean, my background is theater, and getting that playbill and having that and reading about the performers after I've watched the show is really fun for me. And that is something that does frustrate me about circus.
Yeah, because I'm the same. I came from a theater background. And when I was younger, like, that would always be what I'd look at is where these people trained in the programs.
Yeah, like, how can I get that good?
But I think other challenges in terms of writing about circus, for me, I do notice that people who are used to working strictly as a theatre reviewer for plays or for musical theatres or even for the kind of experimental stuff now, they will all often look at a circus show and try and look at it through the lens of their previous expertise. So they will comment on where it lives up to what they think a good theatre show should be, without stopping to imagine that maybe circus isn't trying to be what theatre is trying to be, and that the intentions and the desire that create a successful show are not the same. So there's a challenge for people to get outside of their conventional expectations and actually see circus as a separate thing with separate agenda from what a dance show or a theatre show might set out to do. And there are crossovers, of course, but they sit in slightly separate circles of this Venn diagram. And then from people within circus, there's a fear, I think, of one, of being critical about other people's work in a public sphere. Like, a couple of times people have said to me, I would like to write reviews for you, but I'm not sure about putting my name to it, because it's such a small world in circus, and a small collaborative movie world. Everybody moves around a lot. Somebody said to me recently, when you start circus, you start travel. And it's so true. Yeah. So the person that you might not enjoy their performance one day and write a review of, you might be working with in the show the next day. And that, I think, is a challenge for people who are still actively working, which is why there's not a lot of critical comment coming from within the circus industry as there is in maybe other forms.
I think it's interesting how a circus act in one show can look amazing and another show look terrible, even if the act is the exact same almost. Because when I saw Bianco, I had a friend in it whose act I had seen in Switzerland, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a nice act. It didn't really strike me as anything amazing. Uh-huh. And when I saw it in Bianco, I was like, oh my God, he absolutely killed it. That was one of the best acts I've ever seen. And I think and trick-wise, it's almost the exact same. Like, his vocabulary is very, very similar. His style of movement is very, very similar. But given the new context, I was really blown away by it in a way that I hadn't been the first time I'd seen it.
But one thing I do find at the moment that is quite a challenge for me is that there are so many different reasons why criticism can exist. And I've been kind of reading books and studying and looking into the history of criticism. But because there are so few people writing about circus in this way, I kind of feel like I have to try and cover all of those bases in one review, which is not as useful as if there were six different people all writing from their own different perspectives. So I'm trying to make it useful to artists who might be researching what to do for the next show or other things that might be similar. I'm trying to make it useful for audiences who are trying to figure out whether they want to go and see this production or not. I'm trying to make it useful for venue bookers and people who might be programming work, give them the information that they need. I am trying to make it useful to historians and researchers because for people who are trying to research circus performance from a historical point of view, it's a real struggle because
that's a lot of audiences you have to write for.
If I was one of a big pool of people writing circus reviews, I would probably try and focus down more, but I feel like this massive responsibility on my shoulders a lot of the time that I've just got to try and get as much information about as much circus out there as possible so that as many people can know about it and spread it further. And it's like starting a web, and hopefully that web will continue to spread and I won't have to do it all.
So we usually wrap up our interviews by asking two questions.
Right.
And I think you're going to be great to answer, particularly the first one. So we like to ask our guests for a book, a movie, and a show recommendation. And they don't necessarily have to be anything. It could just be a book you love or a show you love, but maybe something that, you know, the audience would enjoy reading, watching, and seeing.
Okay, so the book, I'm going to go with... I'm trying to pick one of two. I'm going to go with Semiotics of the Circus by Paul Plisak.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, we have that on our bookshelf. Perhaps I will read that book next.
Yeah, no, it's great. He's the only person that I know that is actually writing analytically about performance rather than about dramaturgy or kind of social circus elements and things like that. He's writing about what makes an act strong and the detail of how a performance works and why it works. And he's 83. He's brilliant. I met him when I was in Toronto. That was like my high academic point of the tour. And he's got another book that's Circus's Multimodal Discourse, and he's got one on the clowns. He's got a new one coming out. So I really kind of look up to him as that's something to aspire to, like to have more analysis of circus performance out there. So that's my book, a show and a film. There is a show that it doesn't exist in, well, I don't, it doesn't currently have a tour or anything like that, but I really, the most interesting, oh no, oh, can I do two? Because I didn't do a film.
Sure.
There was a show called Shelter Me by a group called, going by the name Circumference, and they set up to do an immersive circus experience in the vein of kind of Punch Drunk type work, where they set up in a building and they lead you through, and the different rooms have different environments, and then you'll stumble upon circus performers doing various things, and you end up on the roof of this building watching the artist swinging out literally above the London skyline, which is incredible. It wasn't a perfect show by any means, but I think it was really brave, and it was very successful for being like the first circus company to ever attempt this kind of thing. And I would like to see more of that kind of work. So that's a special show, I think. And then another one that I really enjoyed because it seemed like it was kind of innovating, and it was using an environment where you're involved as the audience member, which we've talked about, but also those things that we've said about using circus to represent and to illustrate a story, but also to tell its own stories. It was a show by Crash Mat Collective.
That's a fun name.
Which is a Welsh, they're based in Cardiff, and a lot of the performers have done stuff with No Fit State before. And the show was called, this is going to kill me now, Facade. The show was called Facade. And it was a dining experience. I saw it in the Welsh Millennium Centre, and they took it to different theatres, so it did go up to London and stuff. And in the black box studio space, kind of riggable studio space, they set up tables, they had a kitchen, and the performers were your waiters for the day. So that was that they really were taking your orders, and they really were bringing your food, but then they were also in character, and as they moved around the room you would get different snippets of their relationships through what they were saying, how they were talking to each other, how they were talking to us. And there was some voiceover soundtrack that was like their internal monologues as well. And then there were also set pieces that were character studies. So one that comes to mind was the guy that was like doing like war flashbacks. Like he was a veteran, and now he was working in this restaurant, but his act was the violence of the things that he'd experienced previously. And there was and the different pieces of kit were set up above tables. So there was like the hand balance on one, and there was a trapeze above another, and there's a Chinese pole, and then there would also be kind of choreographic sequences in the chairs and on the tables and around you. And yeah, it was a really special show, and I think it should have more life in it. So if anybody's listening for Crash Mat Collective, get that show back on the road, or theatres, book it, or venues, anywhere, book it, because that's, that needs more life in it, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
And then our final question is, had you not become a circus critic and writer, what do you think you would have done?
A totally different world. Probably be a teacher. Yeah. Because I like working with people a lot. Like, so the stuff that I do with the Circus Diaries doesn't pay me any money. Like, this trip of coming to the States has been a one-off funding that I mentioned from the Arts Council just for this month. But otherwise, the only way that I make any money from my circus writing is there's a Patreon page associated where people can kind of donate a monthly amount to get the content I produce direct to their inbox. So I get about $100 a month from that, which doesn't cover travel to see with like two shows. But my jobs that I do to earn me money I am a giggle doctor for Theodora Children's Charity, which is very similar to the Clown Care program that Big Apple Circus run. So we go into children's hospitals and we play games with the kids and we entertain the kids, and we're all kind of trained from performance backgrounds. So it's very much about meeting the needs of the children, and that interaction, that participation, I really enjoy. So, and I've done theatre work in schools as well in the past. So I guess, yeah, in a different world, I would be a teacher. Yes.
And so how can people find your Patreon?
So at the bottom of every post that I make on the Circus Diaries, there's a little button that says, if you want to keep the Circus Diaries alive, please click here to donate. So you can do that. Or if you go on the Patreon / the Circus Diaries, I think, or you could just search for it. I have a Facebook page as well, which is the Circus Diaries on Facebook, and there's a Twitter, which is now Circus Diaries. So I'm getting the branding together slowly and surely. So there's lots of different ways in that you can find me. But yes, the best way to keep up to date on all your circus information of shows, news, reviews, is to get updates straight to your email. Oh, I can't even talk. I'm just going to give up right now. Just sign up for Patreon, please, and that will really help make me continue doing these things that lovely people like Josh here think is important, and yeah, hopefully you do too.
Yeah, well, thank you for fighting the good fight and spreading information about circus that, you know, at least I otherwise wouldn't be able to get. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
That was our interview with Catherine Cavanaugh. Hope you enjoyed it.
I just realized her name is great for, like, if she was a sports player. And next we have Catherine Cavanaugh. Although Book Kennison.
What kind of sport are you imagining Catherine playing where you get announced like that?
Baseball.
Oh, baseball. I was imagining like WWE wrestling.
Yeah, that's maybe more of what I did.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please share it with your friends. Go on iTunes, rate us. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.